I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As a bloke, absolutely brilliant. From when I first came to the club, there was in the hostel and there was a period where myself and we were waiting to move into a house or something like that. And my wife was still down south with Luke. And I actually lived in the hostel with him and Carol, his wife and kids, for a little while. And that looked after me fantastically. Brilliant bloke, brilliant coach, and genuinely one of life's what I would class as real vibrant people. Always got a smile on his face, always enjoyed doing what he was doing. We were talking about some funny things about when we used to go to Scotland for like some of the pre-season tours and stuff like that. And I think it was, I don't know, it was Largs, they were talking about all the lads were out playing golf and I was shite at golf. And it was Turnberry, I think I was that poor that I actually played 1-0 and went, no, I can't be doing this, it's disrespectful to the course. I went back in and played squash with Crosser instead. Like, but he's a great bloke, really good bloke. And that, when you take it back to when we got to the FA Cup final, we got on a roll, as you know, obviously everyone knows, you get to the final and that. And then the big thing then was his preparation for the final was superb. Like, honestly, we went down to Maidenhead, stayed in the Tickled Trout, I think it was called. And everything about the way he prepared it was not only for a really, really, really big game, but it was also geared to enjoying ourselves as well. And I know some people go, well, what do you mean by enjoying yourself? That game could have been, for some of us at the time, possibly the pinnacle of our careers and that. And what he wanted to do was make the whole occasion enjoyable. So not only did we go down there and train and trained well, he also put a trip on the Thames off for us and we had a couple of beers because we were down there about a week. It was just, I've never got it, a brilliant way of preparing for a cup final. And yeah, we didn't get the result we'd have liked, but you could not fault with anything he'd done in preparation for that. And a really genuinely lovely bloke and a lovely family.
Delighted to say we are joined by former Sunderland manager Malcolm Crosby. We're in the Peacock, of course we are, because it's where we tend to do things here, so that's explained some of the background noise.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, just right in time now, wasn't it? They're setting up here because we are ahead of opening time on a Sunday, but there's no alcohol involved. Absolutely not. No. Glad to have you with us, Malcolm. Thanks for coming along.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to talk about your time as manager, obviously, Malcolm, but I want to start a little bit before that, firstly, because you're from the area, from South Shields, so you tell us a little bit about your upbringing and your the way you got into football and stuff.
Yeah, well, I played at school and then played for the town team. I wasn't good enough to get in the county team, and when I was coming up to 16, I was offered a trial down in Aldershot. And I was basically asked to make the numbers up because there was a fella who lived up here, scouted players for Aldershot, and he recommended three. So I went up to make four, so it was like two in a room, you know, and I was the one who got kept on, and the other three, unfortunately, didn't. And that was the start of my playing career. 10 years with Aldershot, and then I had 5 years with York City, and then I moved into coaching.
So York City, that was playing for Dennis Smith in the latter part of that as well. He was the manager there.
Yeah, I went there in 1981, and then Dennis took over, I think it was in 1982 or 83. And he had Viv Busby alongside him as his assistant, and we won the league under Dennis. We were the first team to get 100 points, and we had a good team. And obviously, we had John Byrne playing in that team, who obviously played for Sunderland. So that was good times. And, you know, Dennis and I have become big friends, but he's been a big influence in my career.
So when he gets linked with the Sunderland job, you're obviously from the area, you've been away, you've been at Aldershot and Oxford, which aren't close to the North East as places. What was this like for you then? Were you sort of pushing him towards it, telling him about the area, telling him about the club?
Not really, because obviously Dennis got invited to be the manager, but I was living in Kuwait at the time. I'd gone out there coaching. I'd left York. Dennis was like a bit tight, you know, so he wouldn't give me a decent wage. So I then moved to Kuwait. And so when Dennis got the job, I was out there. And obviously, you know, they did. Him and Viv did really well.
What were you doing in Kuwait? Well, you said you were coaching, but...
Yeah, I was coaching under 20s, a team in like a league. And then I went and worked with George Armstrong and coaching under 18 team. And he was a great fella, Geordie Armstrong, the ex-Arsenal player. Unfortunately, you know, he passed away a few years ago. But he was really good. And the team I had, we won the league. And I was really set to stay there for longer because I was offered a new deal. But when I came home, and I was living down in Oxford, I was living in the North East at the time, and I came home and I went and met Den and Viv. There was a pub opening in Spennymoor, I think it was. And I was chatting to directors and the like, and then Den said, look, you know, there's going to be a youth team job coming up if you fancy it. So I went home, told the wife that I wanted to take the job, and it was like half the money I was earning in Kuwait. Not as sunny, obviously, as Kuwait. So, you know, women go like, you must be crazy, you know, why do you want to do that? But I did. You're a Sunderland supporter. It was a great opportunity to work for the club. And even better, I ended up playing like in the reserves as well, which had, you know, that was great. I was playing at places like Old Trafford and Anfield, and I'd been used to playing at like Chester and Barrow and Workington, so it was that was great.
Football's strange like that, isn't it, where there's nothing else like it that has that emotional pull, because who else would leave a job and then go and get another one for half the money? But when it's football and it's a team you support, it just changes everything.
Well, it does. And you know, I was ambitious as a coach, and I'm thinking, well, it's no good me staying in Kuwait. I'm going to be rich, but it's not really going to get me a great job. And coming to Sunderland, you know, like you say, it was a bit of a mad thing to do, but when you're a supporter, and obviously I wanted to be the youth coach, but then your next step is you want to become the reserve coach and you want to become first team coach. And that's why you take the jobs.
When you were youth team coach, there's every few years maybe Sunderland will bring through a crop of young players that make the first team. We're seeing a little bit of that now. Currently, we had the team where Waghorn and Henderson and Colback come through. But before that, when you were youth team manager, Craig Russell, Mickey Greer, Martin Smith, Brian Atkins and Martin Greer, these are all players who were going to go on and play for the first team. Were you aware of how talented that bunch of players were at the time?
I did think there were. It wasn't so much the talent, it was like their attitude. They had wonderful attitude. I remember Brian Atkinson saying to me, I'd been here about a couple of weeks, and I said to him, we'll be training most afternoons. I said, because we need to, you know, you're young players, you need to improve. And I remember him saying, we never did that with Chris McMenemy. So straight away, he'd taken a bit of a dislike to me because I wasn't working him hard. And I said, well, that's fine, you know, but I said, you'll be doing it with me. And then he came up to me a couple of months later and said, you know, thanks for that. It's the best thing ever happened. Like, you know, we're really getting stronger. We're getting better technically. And I did have a lot of good young players, but it was their attitude. They had fantastic attitudes. I think they had lively attitudes off the pitch as well. But that was the character of them, you know. They were great lads, and people like, we brought Davy Rush in, who left Notts County. We brought Mickey Green, who'd been released by Man United. And obviously we had Kieran Brady, we had Paul Williams, who I think made his debut at Man U.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of good young players, but it was their attitude that stood out.
Mm-hmm. Which was the crop of Oars players, in your opinion, at the time? Was there any that really stood out for you?
Well, without a doubt, the crop. I mean, Kieran Brady was an outstanding talent. He had so much ability, and we all know how clever he was as a footballer, but unfortunately, you know, his lifestyle let him down. But then Brian Atkinson, he was, I brought him into the team, and he played in the youth team for me, and he played in the reserves, and he was a good player, Brian Atkinson. And I remember watching him play for England down at Reading, and I brought him back, you know, and he was outstanding for England. So he was probably the best player, really, you know, and I think Brian, in the end, I think he had a bad injury, didn't he?
I think he struggled with injuries.
He struggled with injury.
I'm trying to think where he went after. He left us about 95, wasn't it? Yeah. 96, but I'm trying to think where he went afterwards.
I don't know where he went, you know, but I know he struggled with injury because he was a very
good... If you don't know, don't mention it.
He was a very good player, and he was, like, so strong, you know, and so composed for a young player. But tell you, I had some good players, you know, and, like, anything, if you've got a lot of good players, you get yourself a decent team.
And I mean, more on Brian Atkinson, because he had a big influence on that cup run, certainly early on. But you started youth team coach, and then you made the transition to first team coach under Dennis at Sunderland as well. How did that happen? That was quite a big topic of discussion at the time, wasn't it? Because Viv Busby had worked with him before that, and Dennis told us that he just felt you were a better coach, and that's what the team needed at the time.
Well, you know, to be fair to Dennis, he's never actually said that to me. So it was good of him to say that. But it was, like, strange for me because I loved the Busby, you know, and him and Dennis were great, you know. They were great for me. But I just came in one morning and then Dennis asked me up to his office and just said, you know, you're now first-team coach. Viv Busby's left. And I think they'd obviously had a disagreement and Viv had walked out. So that was sad because, you know, I had lots and lots of respect for Viv, and as time went on, you know, I ended up at Swindon and I managed to get Viv in as the youth team coach there, which was great for me to actually help him get into the job, because he'd been great with me, you know, when I'd been at York and Sunderland.
So you've worked with Viv and you've worked with Dennis, obviously, at York, at Sunderland. You've progressed from youth team coach to first team coach. Sunderland are comprehensively beaten at Oxford 3-0 on the 28th of December. Dennis is sacked 2 days later, the day before New Year's Eve. Sunderland have a game New Year's Day, obviously, because the football teams play New Year's Day. He's your friend, he's your manager, but they need somebody to take the team on New Year's Day. Who did you speak to first? Who told you that news first? The club and asked you to be caretaker manager, or Dennis ringing you to tell you what had happened?
I think what happened, Dennis pulled me in and said that he'd been dismissed, you know, and they wanted me to take the team. And at the time I said, no, I'll leave with you. And Dennis said to me, you know, and it was good advice, he said, look, you'd be stupid to leave, and you're leaving a great job. You're getting the opportunity to take the first team. You should do it. But I was very angry that Den had been sacked, you know. And, you know, he talked me round and I sat down and obviously you think about it and it made sense. So, right, I'll take the team and do it as best as I can, you know.
Did you feel he should have had more time? He, again, you'll remember that season that Dennis sold Marco Gabbiadini to raise some funds. And he didn't think he had enough time to put that team together and let them gel.
He turned an opportunity down in the summer to go to Stoke as well, didn't he? So obviously his hometown team. So it must have been awful to lose your job 3 or 4 months later.
Well, he did. He did turn the Stoke job down. It's like anything as well. I could see us turning it round. I had enough belief in myself as being a coach that could organise the team and help them. And I always thought Dennis was like... Dennis is very good as a manager and a coach, you know, and I think we could have turned it round. The result at Oxford was a bad result, but then going to Oxford was never easy for any team. you know, it's got that slope. And if they win the toss, you know they're going to come down that slope second half and give you a good battering, you know. So it was never an easy place to go to. And as a friend, I didn't want Dennis sacked. You know, I'd just been given the opportunity, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks before that to be first team coach. So I was just getting into that role, and I was thoroughly enjoying it, you know. And I did think we would have been okay.
I was 17th at the time. I mean, I've got the team up here that played Oxford, and people who were around that era, you know, we were both kids in that era, so I can remember most of these games. I remember all of the games in the cup run like they were yesterday. But if I'll name the team that played in that game, because they fell at 17th in the league at the time.
Yeah.
Tony Norman, John Kerr, Anton Rogan, Paul Bracewell, Gary Bennett, Kevin Ball, Gary Owers, Kieran Brady, Don Goodman, John Byrne, Gordon Armstrong. That's a decent team, that, isn't it?
Exactly. And if you look at that team, I don't know how many changes I would have made. I probably made about 2 or 3, did I, in that team?
We'll have a look.
There wouldn't have been many, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, you actually, do you know how many games you won when you first got the job? Do you know what your initial record was like?
Yeah, I think I won, was it 4 or 5?
You won your first, four. Then you drew, and then you won again. So your first 6 games, you won 5 of them.
Helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's you're hiding nothing afterwards, or if you don't win the game, that's a problem, isn't it? Everyone's like, well, you've won 4 or 5.
Oh, yeah, you're expected to win every game, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's the joys of management, isn't it?
The two changes I can see that you've made, Paul Hardiman's coming to the team, and Brian Atkinson. And Brian Atkinson, he's a very symbolic player for you, because at the time he wasn't in the first team, he was a youth player. You've brought him in straight away. He's played in that first game. You've beat Barnsley 2-0 on New Year's Day. And then you play Port Vale, which is where the cup run starts. Yeah. Round 3 of the FA Cup. Brian Atkinson plays. Brian Atkinson scores. Brian Atkinson gets man of the match. The crowd are all chanting about you. Sign him on. Sign him on, because they want you to have the job. That's quite early as well, before you go on your little run.
Right, right. Well, like you say, I mean, we talked about Brian earlier, and he was a talent. There's a good story about him and all. When I came to the training ground at the beginning of pre-season, and Chris McMenemy was the youth coach, and he said to me, I was working in Q8, and I'd popped in, and he said, do you want to take them for a run? Because Chris couldn't run very well, and I could. And I went, yeah, I'll take them for a run. He said, take them like, yeah, they're, you know. I did this run, and Brian Atkinson was sick. Right, so straight away he wasn't that keen on me, because I'd taken him on this long run, and he was ill, like he spewed up. And I always forget it, so straight away I'm thinking, oh, he's going to love me like this lad. But, you know, he was a big influence. And obviously having Paul Bracewell alongside him was even bigger. And the one thing, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but the one thing about Paul Bracewell, when I first got the job, I felt he was trying to do too many people's jobs, and then not being able to do his own. And he was had such a wonderful attitude. He wanted to get out wide to help the winger. He wanted to get out the other position, and I said, just play in the middle, and the wingers, they've got to do their job. You don't do their job for them. And he was fantastic for me then, really was.
This was the start of a cup run that, I mean, We know how it turned out in the final and stuff, but this was a time when the FA Cup was still really, really popular in England, and everybody got behind it. And by the time we got to the latter stages, I mean, you know, there were red and white decorations up in all the shops. The gingerbread man had Sunderland strips on. Your side was properly gripped, wasn't it, with cup fever that throughout that whole run?
Well, that was probably the best thing that came out of it. It made Sunderland and the area a happy area to be at the time. And when you're a supporter yourself, you know how good that feels, you know, when people were walking around with smiles on their face. And as daft as it seems, the main aim really was to stay in the league. That was the main aim. But the cup, it did take it over, and we ended up, It was tough in the league because of the exertions that we had in the cup games, you know. But it was wonderful for fans.
It's funny, that one, isn't it? Because now people often say,
constrain the league.
You know, well, sometimes having good runs in the cups can invigorate you in the league. And may, I don't know if that's just a consequence of the way the game is now. That may be, it had a detrimental effect at the time in the league games, and there was so much focus on the importance of that FA Cup.
I felt that we ended up, because we'd put so much into the cup games, because we were playing, like, in general, in the latter stages, we were playing higher league clubs, you know, from the top division. And I think we didn't have enough when it came to the league games. And if you can remember, as the time went on, we played 2 weeks where we played like four games in a week, which, you know, that wouldn't happen anymore, I wouldn't have thought. The fixtures would be sorted, that you wouldn't be doing it. And obviously, yeah, I had a squad of players, but the rest of the players at the time probably were not good enough to replace what I had, you know. So it was a difficult balancing act, and, you know, we had the cup did take a lot out of the players, the cup games.
I mean, arguably as well, you missing one of your best players, replacing with Gabby Deeney for the cup games, obviously, and Goodman, because he couldn't play in the games, could he? Because he was cup tied.
Don Goodman was cup tied. Peter Davenport was fantastic in the cup games, you know, and him and Bernie did really well. But you would have liked to have had Don Goodman, because that would have given me an extra striker, you know, and it didn't. And fair play, they still got the job done in the cup games, but the league was tough. And that was, you know, the reason, if you remember, why I was given the job was because we were struggling in the league. Everybody was looking at it thinking, well, we might get relegated here. But as you've said earlier, we had a decent set of players.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Don Goodman, that's an interesting one. That Bob Murray has recently, he was having a chat with another podcast, and he recently had suggested that Don Goodman, he didn't rate him, basically. And a big reason we got the cup final was because he wasn't in the team and we were better with him, not in the team, which that's not how I remember it as a kid. We beat Millwall 6-2 in one of your games, which is a game that will always live along in my memory. Don Goodman scored a hat-trick in that game.
He was my favourite player, Goodman, as a kid, so he was absolutely, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. He was my first favourite Sunderland player, Goodman.
Well, I can understand where Bob's coming from, because he's probably looking at him and saying, well, I paid a lot of money out to get him. But Don Goodman was a handful. He was a strong player, and he had a goal in him. And, you know, he played in league games, but at the end of the day, you know, I didn't have him in the cup, I knew that. The one thing about Don Goodman was, he was so supportive of the other players. So, in that cup run, can you imagine if you're cup tied and you're not getting a game, and you're seeing your team go all the way to Wembley, how it must like be sickening, really, because you're missing out. But he was so good with the rest of the team, you know, so supportive. So, if Bob thinks like that, I mean, I think he was a good addition to have in your squad, a good player. So, you know, Bob's entitled to his opinion. And let's face it, he gave Dennis the money to buy him. So
I met my one. Sorry, that one memory I've got from that game is 6-2 in the last minute. John Kerr gets put through on goal, and he was so famous for being, you know, for obvious reasons, he was such a hard player, a local lad, but he never scored for Sunderland. And I remember the referee blew his whistle, didn't he? As he was in the box, yeah. And the referees have to say no, that they've had enough, and he stuck the ball in the net anyway and celebrated. And that's one memory I have from a kid, right quite vividly.
Well, I can remember that. He was just in the box, one with the keeper, and you're thinking, this is going to be brilliant, Casey finishing it off 7-2. And the ref blew, and I mean, what sort of referee would do that, you know? I mean, talk about being strict with the rules, like, it was embarrassing. The sad thing about that game, there'd been somebody at Millwall, he works for the BBC, is it Baker?
Danny Baker.
Danny Baker was a big Millwall fan. Yeah. And he'd been criticising poor Bruce Rioch for a long time as a Millwall fan, you know. And of course, that result got Bruce to sack. I'm sure he was sacked after that game.
Because he lived on the like 505 call radio phone-in thing at that time.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. he had a lot of sway, you know, and it didn't help poor Bruce Rioch. And you know, it was a great performance by the players. And obviously, if you can win 6-2, right, it's great. Mm. But you don't like to see people lose their job.
Yeah, they didn't like coming up here in Millwall because we'd done them 6-0 a few years later as well.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
I think they were top of the league. We beat them 6-0 and they got relegated.
McCarthy was manager, yeah. Craig Wilson scored four.
Yeah, mm.
Did he?
Yeah, Craig. Well, I remember actually coming down as a kid and going down to Silkswith and watching your youth team a couple of times when you were there, actually. And you could tell Craig Russell then again, another one, wasn't he? You could tell he was going to make it.
Well, I mean, Craig and Martin Smith were like in a younger group. Mm. You know, like with the Paul Williams and Aki and Brady and all them, they were probably a year or two down from them. And I got them pro contracts at 17 because I knew there was something special about them. Well, you know,
Martin Smith played for England as a kid all the way through, didn't he?
Yeah, and there was no way we wanted someone to nick them, you know, so we got them signed up quickly. And, you know, they were both left-footed, which is unusual for strikers. You know, two of them, but they were both talented lads, you know. Quite shy lads, to be honest, as well. I sometimes think that if they'd have been a little bit more cocky, you know, they might have even been better. But that was their makeup, you know, so they weren't going to change, like, but they were good players.
Fourth round of the FA Cup then, 3-2 at Oxford.
Oh,
something
yeah.
Something romantic about the fact it was Oxford, I think, after that was the game that saw Dennis lose his job, and we go down there a few weeks later and beat them 3-2.
Well, we went down and it got called off, didn't it? We were near Nottingham on the coach and it got called off, so we came back, so that was a wasted weekend. And then when we went down in the evening game, I just said to them, kick up the hill first half if you win the toss, don't let them go down the hill second half. And we kicked up the hill, so they were going downhill first half. We were 2-0 up, I think, at half time. And then we went 3-0 up into the second half, and I was thinking, this job's a doddle, isn't it?
Brian Atkinson scoring again.
I was sat on the wall, actually, next to the dugout, and it was like 90 minutes. I'm thinking, hey, this is great, this. And then they scored two goals in injury time. I was like, bloody hell, it's not as easy as I thought, you know.
Having a look at the Oxford team, there was a player at the time called Kevin Francis, but maybe
the big striker.
He wasn't there. He wasn't
big
there,
tall striker.
I was curious if he was involved because he was always a bit of a comedy figure of the year.
I'll tell you who they had. They had a big centre forward who had really given us a bad time when they beat us 3-0, and he'll be on that list. He played in the cup game and we sorted him out in that game. And you know, it was like I said, a difficult place.
John Dernan?
No, John was a little striker.
Trevor Earlott?
Yeah, that's him.
Right.
He'd given us a real bad time. He'd got hold of the ball, he bullied us. And I can't remember what back four I played in the cup game. It must have been Rogie, must have been playing centre-half that instead of maybe left-back. But we dealt with him much better. And obviously we went down the hill thinking that would work, and it did, until they scored them two late goals. And I got a bit of a panic on then, like, but it was a big, big result, that.
Looks like Rogan's playing left-back because centre-half because Paul Hardiman's in the team as well. The fifth round, West Ham come. The league wins have really dried up by this point. This is March again. This is a fifth round of the FA Cup. 25,000 fans in Roker Park, which was full at the time.
Yeah.
That shows you what the appetite for the FA Cup was still like. 1-1, John Byrne scores again. Of course, he scored in every round up until the final, but it was the replay in that one with West Ham, wasn't it, going down there. Another 3-2.
Oh, that's a bad pass. Byrne will get to this. Oh, he's in! What a start for Sunderland. Covered by Ball. Davenport. Oh, he took it well, Davenport. And here comes Byrne again. He's covered by Dix, is he? He's a real awkward player, John Byrne. He's made it two. It's 2-0 Sunderland. Martin Allen. And suddenly West Ham supporters find a little bit to get excited about. Still Allen! Oh, what a goal! Sunderland have got everybody back. But it's Allen who hits it. Oh, it's in! Faced by Julian Dix. Left foot cross, Byrne, Rush! 3-2 Sunderland, David Rush!
The first game was probably the worst game I've ever seen, I think. It was really windy, if you remember. It was just a bad game. And we got the draw. We deserved the draw. And then we went down there, and I've got to say, I think Tony Norman had a fantastic game. He made some great saves in that game. But, you know, we wouldn't lie down, right? We kept I think we...
We got 2-0 up. Byrne scores twice, and we go 2-0 up. And then Martin Allen scores twice for West Ham and pulls it back to 2-2. David Rush scores with around 10 minutes left, which was the winner.
And I think I brought Kieran on, and he did quite well, I think. And that was a massive result.
West Ham were in the Premier League, and we were in the obviously in the league below.
I think Billy Bonds was manager.
He was, yeah.
And I think he didn't last long after that, the poor fella. So at the time, I was caretaker manager. I was getting rid of nearly every manager we played. So,
You might have been, teeing some jobs up for yourself if you didn't get the Sunderland job.
Well, I think that when I look back, that possibly might have happened, but it didn't. It didn't happen because I didn't take that. I took that offer up as managing Sunderland, but that was a big, big win because West Ham were decent. They had a good side, and when you draw at home, you think you're going to go away and maybe, we might get beat. That's it. But all credit to the players, like they dug in and they got a great result.
The 9th of March, does that date mean anything to you?
No.
Two things happened on that day. Sunderland played Chelsea in the quarterfinals, away from home.
Yeah.
Dennis Smith is appointed Bristol City manager.
Yeah.
Right. Was there a conversation you had with Dennis about going to join him at Bristol?
Yeah. He asked me, would I go? I don't know if he mentioned it when he had a chat. He asked me, would I go? And I said, no, I want to give it a go here.
Because you're in the quarterfinal by this point.
So yeah, I just said I wanted to stay at Sunderland and give it a go and hopefully get the job. I think we would have been all right at Bristol together. But, I want to... It doesn't matter what, there's a lot of clubs that you'd go to, but Sunderland is one that takes a bit of beating, It's a great job for anybody, and obviously when you're being brought up in the area, it's even better. So I just said, no, I wanted to stay and to take it on.
And again, like the West Ham game, 1-1 the first game, this is at Stamford Bridge. Ian Porterfield's Chelsea manager as well, of course, scored the winning goal for Sunderland in the 73 Cup final.
I remember
I remember at the time he wouldn't talk about it. He was getting asked. Obviously, the media were interested in that angle and that hook, as you would be as a journalist, but he just wasn't interested in talking about that. I don't know why that sticks in my mind, but it does. John Byrne equalised quite late on in that game. Clive Allen had put Chelsea ahead, and it looked like they were going to just do enough to beat us, but then John Byrne... That cup run was made through him in a lot of ways.
That away game, I thought we played really well. We were playing a decent team, obviously, in Chelsea, but I thought we deserved a draw at least. I thought we played well. And, taking them back to Sunderland was a great result for us. Yeah.
Byrne. Davenport peeling away to the left. Rush coming in support. Byrne going all the way, and it is now 1-0, and there will be nothing wrong with that one from Peter Davenport. Rush and Byrne did some excellent work down the right, and Peter Davenport scores his fourth goal of the season, his second in the FA Cup, and Sunderland lead at Roker Park. Just under 5 minutes remaining. Davenport's goal, but Wise with the equaliser. Davenport had given Sunderland a lead which had lasted until 4 minutes from time, and Tony Norman's agony is apparent. There's some twists to come here yet. Brian Atkinson, the outswinger this time. And a good header, and a great header to make it 2-1, and Sunderland have struck back again. Gordon Armstrong, who has played so well throughout this game, has scored a goal worthy of taking a team to the semi-final.
Where's that replay then? What about you, Gareth, as a fan? You were going then, weren't you?
Not really, no.
Oh, you know.
No. I mean, I started to probably go when Butcher was a player, so it probably would have been
we'll get on to that.
So that was probably... I remember at the time what it was like, and all the, the red and white stuff all over and all that on the cup, and obviously you captured the imagination of everybody, as you'd imagine. I mean,
I think if you speak to Sunderland fan, because I can remember, I was 11 and I remember clear as day, that night game, it was live on Sky Sports as well. And if you speak to most people from that era and you say, you're talking about Roker Park, what was your favourite ever game at Roker Park? And that one gets referenced a lot because it had everything, the night atmosphere. Late winner, the drama, because Dennis Wise equalised with 3 minutes left or so to make it 1-1, which must have been kicking yourself about.
Well, they were very good, weren't they? They were a good team, you know, and they had a lot of good players. And there was times in that replay that we were hanging on, and eventually they did get the goal, you know. But the second goal, which everyone always talks about, I remember Aki practising that with Gordon Armstrong, and
Practice
the corner. He used to ping it in, and he used to head it. And you know, I used to stood on the training ground watching them and saying, "You've no chance. What you're doing?" You know, just having a laugh with them. But they used to practice it, and I couldn't believe it when he actually scored it. You know, they'd been doing it, and it actually came off, and it was like it was a wonderful header. You won't see many better headers than Gordon Armstrong's, you know, and everything. I mean, it went right above the player in the top corner, didn't it? And it was just, you know, it was a fantastic ending to a game.
And you're on cloud nine by this point, I'm guessing.
I was in shock.
Thinking of where you are, where you arrived by this point.
Well, I was in shock because they'd scored off it. Obviously, the game was a huge, huge game, and we played a very good team, and it was a big, big win, obviously. It was a massive win, and the atmosphere in the place was just unbelievable.
What was it like to try and get them to focus on the league at that point? Like you say, we aren't winning in the league by now, but this cup run's just continuing.
It was difficult because, you know, I think you played them games and it took so much out of you, but everybody was putting so much effort in to get the good results that we had. I think they were drained a lot of the time. And then obviously if you had away games, you were getting back on a coach a couple of days later or a day later and you're off to somewhere to play. And it was tough. And, you know, the league form wasn't good. Our performances had really dipped. And it was a worry because at the end of the day, you have to remember, that's why I'd been brought in to try and stop the team going down.
Did you ever go and ask Bob Murray, you know, what's happening here? Because you're still a caretaker manager at this point. Did you want more security at the time?
Well, if you remember, really, it was always like names were getting mentioned about somebody coming in to take over.
Neil Warnock was the one I remember.
A friend of mine. I played with him at Aldershot for 2 years. And Neil was a good manager. He was doing well. And, you know, I was getting all this every day in the paper that, you know, somebody's going to come in. And in the end, I think I did speak to Bob, but I tried not to, I just, thought if I keep... I don't want to be whinging up about, are you going to give me the job or anything? Let's just keep plodding along and see where it takes us, you know? And that was the best way to do it, really.
What was your relationship like with Bob? And obviously he's been very outspoken recently about his relationships with certain managers. I don't think you came up in the conversation, but just interesting, you know.
I think Bob, Bob was quite a quiet, shy type of fella, you know. He never interfered one bit with the football. Like, if, you know, some chairman and that come in, you know, why are you playing him? Why did you do? Bob Murray never interfered with what I was trying to do on the football field. Obviously, you always want a bit more help in the transfer market if you can. And I probably would have liked that a little bit more. But he was fine, but he was quite a quiet sort of fella, Bob, and he didn't interfere, which was good. And, you know, things like letting the players go away for a couple of days. I think we went to Turnberry for 2 or 3 days. And, he would say, yeah, do it, you know, if you want to take them away. So on that side of it, I didn't have a problem with him. The only problem probably was I would have liked to have been given, I think the cup run got me the job, which Bob probably thought I'll give him the job, caretaker job for like a month. And we'll get somebody in as manager, and then fans can make so many things happen, can't they? And as the cup run went on, the supporters were fantastic. They get behind me and they want me to have the job, and I think it probably put a lot of pressure on the board as a whole.
So are you feel in control at this point as well, and you think this is within my capabilities, despite the cup run maybe masking the league form, you're comfortable and you're happy and you want the job full time?
I wanted the job, but I wasn't happy with the league. You know, I was a bit concerned with the league. And as the cup run went on, we were getting further behind in games. And that was the biggest problem. We were going to have to play a big clump of games, and we played them all before the cup final, didn't we? You know, which didn't help.
Yeah. We played three in a week or something, didn't we? And we beat Ipswich on the Tuesday. We lost to Plymouth on the Thursday. Because I remember that, because that was a game you had to get your vouchers to try and get a ticket for the cup final.
Right.
Which I'm very bitter about.
I've got one if you want.
I did get a ticket for the semi-final, however. And again, you know, I can shut my eyes. And as an 11-year-old kid, I can remember John Byrne scoring that header like it was happening right in front of me now.
And it was Rogan's head. This is one against one for a moment. No support. Now it's arriving. Bracewell and Rush and Atkinson and Davenport far side. Positive run by Rush. This is Atkinson. And this is Byrne. He's done it again, Byrne. Scored in every round so far. And that really was a very, very well-made goal. Mr. Midgley has allowed a minute. In the Milk Cup final, it was one goal for Norwich City. In the FA Cup semi-final, it is one goal for Sunderland. John Byrne has scored it, and Sunderland are through to the FA Cup final. And the face was wreathed in smiles before it was covered in embrace. The second division side have made it to the delight of their mass ranks of red and white. They don't know whether to laugh or whether to cry. It's that sort of feeling.
And that was a day again. A decent Norwich team. That Norwich team nearly won the Premier League the following season.
Yeah. We did have a good team to play against in Norwich. They were good, and you know they could score goals as well. But we worked hard and we did our homework on them, and it wasn't the best game in the world, but not many semi-finals are there. It's like all about coming out as winners, and I remember after the game in the coach, and like all the fans were like going up a dual carriageway and all this traffic, and they were all jumping out their minibuses and getting out their cars, and it was quite an emotional day, because to get to Wembley is a massive achievement, isn't it? And like you said, at the time the FA Cup was still very, very popular.
Yeah. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.